So, you know, strange things happen in this wonderful world of ours, ladies and gentlemen, strange things. The books in this remarkable bookshop are, in fact, testament to that. Well, anyway, enough of this reminiscing. I'm here tonight to promote this book. It's a student's guide to Colin Wilson's Archived Trilogy. That is to say, the three big books that he wrote on the occult, all of which have been reprinted quite recently by Watkins Publishing in very nice editions, and I'm sure they're on sale in this bookshop tonight for anyone who is unfortunate enough not to have read them. I am, of course, talking about The Occult, 1971, Mysteries, 1978, and Beyond the Occult, 1988. Now, these three books amounted to an incredible 1,600 pages on the subject and spawned many other lesser works, too numerous to mention here, but listed entirely in this little student's guide. Now, this is part of a series of guides that I've written, am writing, or hope to write in the future on various aspects of Colin Wilson's work. Now, those of you who know Colin Wilson's work will know that he is essentially a philosopher, but he has written in a philosophical vein on many different subjects. My student's guide to his philosophy books, The Outsider Cycle, was published in 2009, and there are a couple of copies still left, and they're on sale here tonight for anyone who feels that they can't live without it. This is the second in the series. The third will come out next year. It's a guide to Colin Wilson's books on literature, what he called his existential criticism. And I'm currently working on a book on sex and sexuality in the work of Colin Wilson. Now, when his classic study, The Occult, was published in 1971, some critics, fans and scholars of his previous non-fiction, particularly The Outsider Cycle, in which he had created his new existentialism and established himself as a philosopher, were surprised. Others were downright horrified. It had seemed that after the terrible mauling that he'd received from the critics and the tabloid press in the late 1950s, his reputation was recovering somewhat and his career taking an upturn. Many thought that this step into the rather contentious unknown was a retrograde step, both mystifying and likely to be a disaster. Wilson, they felt, was merely jumping onto the occult bandwagon. When the book was suggested by Wilson, and he sought the advice of none other than the poet Robert Graves, asking him whether he should write it, he was told very firmly by Graves that he should not. But with a family to support, he spent far too much of the 1960s on the arduous American university lecture trail, keeping him away from home for lengthy periods of time. This was to be his first commissioned work, a sign that he had finally arrived as a professional writer. The financial terms from his would-be publishers, Random House, a £4,000 advance, and remember this is 1969, were obviously too tempting and so he went ahead with the project. Now, up until then, Wilson had always anticipated trends in literature, rather than being one for jumping onto bandwagons. For example, he published with Pat Pittman in 1961 the Encyclopedia of Murder, a book which anticipated the boom in true crime by almost 20 years. His Strength to Dream, a book on literature and imagination, published in 1962, heralded the late 60s obsession with fantasy and science fiction literature. The late 60s also brought a surge in interest in all things mystical, and on this occasion, Wilson was not altogether ahead of the game. The pioneers were, without doubt, Louis Powell's and Jacques Bergier, whose Morning of the Magicians had been a bestseller in France for several years. Now, his publishers clearly wanted Wilson to replicate its success in the English-speaking world, because his monumental study went on to become a bestseller and an inspiration to many who have read it. So, although he lost some readers by taking this seemingly unexpected and bold move into the occult, he gained many, many more. In fact, Wilson has always considered his serious occult books, that is to say the occult trilogy, to be a logical extension of his new existentialism, providing evidence that man possesses latent powers which, if tapped and harnessed, could lead to hugely expanded consciousness and potentially even an evolutionary leap. Now, in a lengthy introduction to the new Watkins edition of Beyond the Occult, published in 2008, he wrote, and I quote, "When the occult appeared in 1971, it soon became apparent that many people who had regarded me as a kind of a maverick existentialist now believed I had turned to more trivial topics and abandoned the rigor of my outsider books. To me, such a view was incomprehensible. It seemed obvious to me that if the paranormal was a reality, as I was increasingly convinced that it was, then any philosopher who refused to take it into account was merely closing his eyes." And in that same introduction, he described Beyond the Occult as his most important non-fiction book, a view that he still holds to this day. If I'd had more time, I would have gone on to say that although readers of his non-fiction were shocked at his seemingly turning away from his philosophy into the occult, readers of his fiction certainly weren't, because occult occurrences occur throughout his fiction, right from Ritual in the Dark right up to the fiction that he's written today, Spider World, indeed. So, yes, you're right.
What is your opinion, knowing as well as you do his work, what's your opinion between the two Colin Wilson writers, the philosopher and the occult writer?
Well, for me, it was just a logical... I'll repeat the question. What's the connection, really, between his philosophy and his interest in the occult? Is that really what you're saying? Yes. Well, it's quite natural, because Wilson's main interest is in expansion of consciousness and how we can live more vital and appreciative lives. And that's basically what his philosophy is about. That is basically what interests him about the occult, the hidden parts of the mind that we can, in fact, utilize. Well, basically what I am doing is I'm going through Colin Wilson's work, picking out, cherry picking if you like, what I consider to be the essential books. And you do have to cherry pick because he's written nearly 180 books, many of which will just fade away into oblivion, but you're left with a very, very strong skeleton of solid books. And what I'm doing is going through each one of those and writing a 3,000 to 5,000 word essay on each one, just to introduce these books to people who have not actually read them, and to get them interested in them. So as I said, I've done all of his philosophy books, his major philosophy books. That's my student's guide to his outsider cycle. I've now moved on to his occult books, his three big occult books, and I've done the books that he's written on literature. So it's a very sort of systematic progression, really, from one book to the other.
Earlier, about the Encyclopedia of Murder,
which
I think came out in 1961,
which
I remember reading pretty much at the time, but was too young to know what the critics said. Because that is a book that's almost devoid of philosophy, isn't it? It's really just biographies of great killers.
Yeah.
So how was that received? Because surely that was a great leap away from his previous books about philosophy, far more than the occult was in some ways.
Yes.
And it was published with rather lurid sort of covers, and was a sensationalist book.
Well, I think, as I said earlier, it was ahead of its time, very much ahead of its time, and it really shocked quite a lot of people, especially Daily Mail readers. Kenneth Allsop, I remember, wrote a long article about it for the Daily Mail, in which he didn't obviously rate it very highly, and he thought that Kurt Wilson was just, dashing it off. But the book actually does contain a fair bit of philosophy, because there is a section that was left out of The Outsider called The Faust Outsider, which he appended to the book. So,
I haven't read it since the early 60s. Mm. But what did the more intellectual critics think of it?
Well, as far as I can see, They didn't review it. The reviews that I've found are very much in the popular press, and they all took a very sort of high-minded view of it. You know, it was a book that they didn't think that they should like, and that their readers should like. I think it got fairly short shrift, but I think it probably sold very well.
Colin, can I just say, doesn't that book have a long introduction where Colin spells out his existential position using crime and murder in the same way that, say, Dostoevsky does?
Yeah.
In Crime and Punishment and all of that.
Mm.
And
yes.
I know in the States, the late historian Jacques Barzin, who only died last year at the age of 107, he would have been a hero of Wilson's, because we know he likes long livers. He wrote Philosopher's Stone that deals with that idea. But he actually mentioned that introduction in a book he wrote about, it was called Science and Science and Society at the time. So just an idea that outside of here, outside of London, where Wilson's name is still pretty much poison, nobody really liked him.
Mm-hmm.
Over in the States, a really established mainstream historian was paying attention to what he was
saying. Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, in fact, I think that introduction to the Encyclopedia of Murder is one of the best short introductions to Colin's ideas, because he manages to pack it in.
Yes, I agree. And the missing section from
Oh, that's
from
it. Okay,
well.
So he used that as the introduction.
The Faust Outsider, There's no hiding the fact that Colin Wilson uses his novels to put over his philosophical ideas, so... Yes, his novels are packed with ideas. Mm-hmm. And quite often he would write a novel and a work of non-fiction at the same time, basically to put his ideas into action.
I think he wrote Witch in the Dark before he wrote The Outsider.
Oh,
it
was yes.
published afterwards, but he wrote it first.
Well, yes, he started Witch in the Dark in 1949, in fact, and it went through many, many different editions before it actually was published in 1960. Yes, it went through many, many changes. If you want to read about that, actually, there's a very good website called londonfictions.com, and I've written a long essay about Ritual in the Dark for that website, and that goes through all the various stages that the novel went through. It's fascinating.
Now, when Colin Wilson's book The Outsider was published in 1956, he was hailed as a major literary talent. He was just 24 years old, but the critics lavished praise on his existentialist writing, and the book sold thousands of copies. Wilson became something of a media star, sought out for his opinions even by the tabloid press. But although he went on to write more than 100 other books on a wide range of intellectual subjects, he never repeated that initial success. Colin Wilson was born in Leicester, the son of a shoemaker. He left school at 16 and took a number of manual jobs, but he was determined to become a writer. As he explained, his first novel, based loosely on the Jack the Ripper story, was inspired by a childhood experience.
When I was a little boy, my dad brought home a book from work which had all these murderers in, and he told us not to read it, so of course we did. Yeah. And all of them had a picture of the murderer at the head of the article, all except one, the one on Jack the Ripper, which had a huge black question mark. Mm. So this got me terribly interested.
In 1954, Colin Wilson moved to London, where he spent his nights in a sleeping bag on Hampstead Heath. His friend and bibliographer, Colin Stanley.
This was to save money, basically, so that he could spend his days in the British Museum writing this novel, Ritual in the Dark. It was set in London in the 1950s. It's a metaphysical thriller.
I felt a tremendous excitement. It was so strong that I felt I'd never want to sleep again. It didn't correspond to anything in particular. It made me think about mathematics. I thought, I am lying here in the middle of London with a population of 3 million people asleep around me and a past that extends back to the time when the Romans built the city on a fever swamp. I was suddenly aware of how many people and places there are outside myself. It was a sense of participation in everything. I wanted to live a million times more than anybody has ever lived.
And why do you think that passage is significant?
Because Saum is the classic outsider. He experiences these flashes of clarity which reveal to him that his life can be lived on a much more intense and vital level.
So let's talk about The Outsider.
It's difficult for us, looking back from the 21st century, to see why there was so much fuss over the book, because it was basically sort of a semi-academic, although very readable, philosophical thesis.
For the individual, the problem is the conscious striving not to limit the amount of experience seen and touched. The attempt to see as a whole, although the instinct of self-preservation fights against the pain of the internal widening, and all the impulses of spiritual laziness build into waves of sleep with every new effort. The individual begins that long effort as an outsider. He may finish it as a saint.
Why do you think The Outsider made such an impact when it was first published?
It was something to do with the mood of the time. There was an interest in the writing of Jean-Paul Sartre, for instance, and Albert Camus.
Was Colin Wilson also seen as one of the angry young men alongside John Osborne, whose play Look Back in Anger opened at about the same time?
That's correct. Yes, he was lumped in with all those.
But I wonder if Colin Wilson had a very high opinion of himself. He wrote in 1956, "How extraordinary that my fame should coincide with Elvis Presley's." I wonder if he was somebody who believed in his own talent.
Oh, he was, very much. And it's this self-belief, really, that has kept him going over the years.
Why do you think he then sort of spectacularly fell out of sight? I mean, the critics, in a way, turned on him later, didn't they?
Yes, they did. In fact, his second book, Religion and the Rebel, was rubbished by the critics in an extraordinary way. What happened then, of course, was what he'd planned to do all along, actually, was to leave London. And so that's when he and Joy Stewart moved to Cornwall, and that's where they've been ever since.
Was it a comfortable, well-furnished house?
It's comfortable, but it's furnished mostly with books and records.
How many books and records would there be there?
I think he said he had about 30,000 books.
And these are books that he'd read. I mean, these are books that shows the voracious nature of his reading, presumably.
Absolutely.
And do you think he was disappointed that he didn't achieve the kind of celebrity later in life that he achieved early in life?
No, he ran away from London, really, to escape all of that.
If you had to pick out two or three others that were particularly special, in your opinion, what would you choose?
The Outsider was the first in a cycle of six books in which he established his existentialism. And he wrote a book which summarised these six books. And he says himself that if he's contributed anything to 20th century thought or existentialism, then that is it. He then turned his attention to the occult. A lot of people felt that he lost interest in philosophy and jumped onto the occult bandwagon, but that wasn't really the case. It was a natural progression. He's always been interested in the potential of the human mind to examine things like psychokinesis and ESP. Again, expressed to him that really there is a lot of potential in the human mind which is untapped.
Colin Stanley on Colin Wilson, who's died aged 82.